Okay, welcome back. You had a good weekend. Enjoyed Halloween. Anybody want to share what their costume was? Looks like no. We'll move on with some announcements for the course. Friday afternoon, I posted midterm grades. So those should all be in Canvas. You should be able to see your graded assignment. We've got a small enough class that I don't think I can really give any statistics on it. But the high scores for the first two problems were full credit. And then for the last problem was a 38 out of 40. Everybody did fairly well on the exam. Sure, you'll notice I grade a lot more strictly on the exams than the homeworks. The policy, but overall, generally pleased with how people did. Problem two maybe tripped a few more people up than I had hoped. Just figuring out what the operation of that thing was. But overall, did well. Any questions on the midterm comments? Okay. Not seeing or hearing any. I looked briefly through the tiny box challenge design comparison from everyone. At least a couple of you had written in there that you were planning to take the written final. A couple others wasn't sure what your decision was, but at the moment, you don't necessarily need to make that decision. You'll need to have made it in the next 2 weeks and before so that your submission for the PCB layout can be done accordingly. So you kind of, as you like, can have up until that's due to make your final decision. But 2 weeks from last Friday, when the PCB layout is due, you'll have to have made the decision and either turn in option one or option two. Option one being a full layout that you're going to fabricate and test. Option two being just a kind of representative total layout area. And then you won't, then you'll be done with the competition at that point. By representative area, I mean something like this that's in the competition requirements document. You don't necessarily need to put in nice 3D models or anything like that, but just something in Altium that has the components down and shows, okay, here's what the area of the PCB would be. Here's the highest component, tallest component in that. So I get an idea of what the volume would be. But no need to route anything up, just place them all there. And should you like, you don't even need to go to Altium. You can do that in some sort of other graphics editor as long as you can show me here's what the layout would look like and here's what the volume would be. Okay. If you go forward with it, Altium at the moment, probably the easiest way to get to it is through the RD servers. If you VPN in, then you can virtual desktop onto RD1 or any of the RD servers under your UTK NetID account, and those have Altium installed, and you can run it from there. Any questions related to that or anything else? Seeing any, I'll move on. Feel free, as always, ask questions through Slido, through the chat, or unmute yourself and ask them. If I'm moving too quick, feel free to ask questions about any of this, and I'll come back to it as I go forward. We'll go ahead and jump into content for today. So last time we were talking about switch capacitor converters, which is the main remaining topic for the course. idea behind switch capacitor converters is, can we either do a first order, just eliminate the inductor? So it's a big component and often lossy. And perhaps as we go down and modify it and see there's some benefit to inductors, can we reduce the energy storage requirements of the inductor and do most of our energy conversion with capacitors? Because capacitors tend to be higher energy density in the kind of hundreds of volts and below in reasonable power, the power supply type range of applications. So yes, but with some caveats. We started just motivating by doing some simplified approximate analysis of this latter type 2-to-1 switch capacitor converter and found we can get a 2-to-1 conversion ratio out of it using only capacitors. Drawback is we can only get a 2-to-1 conversion ratio out of it. There's no regulation or control. But we simply just switch capacitors around in series or in parallel to get some voltage conversion ratio out of them. And we can expand on this and do higher conversion ratios and more complex converters, doing some fraction of integers type conversion ratio depending on the configuration. There are some canonical different types, ladder and Dixon and Fibonacci, different switch capacitor arrangements that scale to higher conversion ratios. But all of them kind of can be analyzed uniformly. And the main way to analyze them is to just look at the energy transfer mechanism. What happens when we transfer energy from a voltage source to a capacitor through some switch with some small on resistance? So we started there, looking at the behavior when we just look at this simple circuit, voltage source, we close a switch, and we have some resistance. So we know now it doesn't even matter if this resistance is zero to charge this capacitor between two voltages. We get some energy transferred that's proportional to the difference between the squares of the starting and final voltage of the capacitor. And we get some loss that's proportional to the square of the difference between those voltages. So if V2 is large, V1 is large, the difference between them is small, we can transfer a lot of energy with very little loss. If V2 minus V1 is comparable in magnitude, or the voltage ripple on the cap is high percentage, then we're going to end up with really inefficient energy transfer. So looked and saw that from the efficiency standpoint, and then we ended here last time. We're going to look at a couple different ways of transferring energy to the capacitor, and then we'll kind of loop back and talk about how we could actually use those in a converter. But first here, we're going to look at if we charge the capacitor from a current source instead of the voltage source, how does that play out in terms of energy transfer and loss? So we set this up before we concluded last time. We have just some constant current, I, charging the capacitor between the same two voltages, V1 and V2. And so we'll set this circuit up. It's a little bit derived here, but such that we have this pulse of current. It goes over some time, T sub C, our charging time for the capacitor, and it has a current I that's whatever the right magnitude is, so that over this time we get from V1 to V2 voltage on capacitor C. Okay. So then setting that up, we know this relationship between the current and the time and the capacitance needs to all conform such that we get this sort of charging voltage. So our current I is the total charge we give to the capacitor over the time of all of this, which is T sub C. And the total charge to the capacitor is C times the change in voltage, V2 minus V1 over TC. So our setup here is that this current is of the correct magnitude to give us exactly this delta V. So kind of back solving, here's that magnitude occurring in terms of the capacitance, change in voltage and time. And then from that, we're gonna look at the same things we looked at for voltage charging. So let's start with delta energy in the capacitor. And this will be no different. I'm gonna have C V2 squared minus V1 squared. So the energy delivered to the capacitor is the same as in the voltage source case. this expression here, because the capacitor goes from V1 to V2. So it's stored energy at the end is 1/2 CV2 squared. At the beginning, 1/2 CV1 squared. No change there. What we're going to see a difference is in the loss in total energy supplied by the source. Let's again go to what is the total energy supplied by our source. Call it I, subscript I just means the energy coming out of this current source. Okay. So that energy we would find by saying, okay, it's the integral from 0 to TC of whatever the voltage is across it. Let's call this V sub I times the current I dt. Okay. I is constant over this whole time. We're just integrating over the portion of time where there is its current there. So we can say during 0 to TC, it is I. Everywhere else, there's zero energy coming out of the source. So we can replace VI with, should be by KVL, V sub C plus IR. Voltage on the cap plus whatever the voltage drop on the resistor is during all this time. The switch is closed, so we have no voltage on it, times I, since I is constant, I'll pull it out front, dt. And then again, split up this integral and evaluate, okay, the integral of V sub C. V sub C is this straight line. It's got a slope of I over C that goes from V1 to V2. So if I integrate VC over this time, I should just get the average value times time. It should be the I out front. We have V1 plus V2 over 2 times T sub C for the integral of VC. And then when I integrate IR, that's constant with respect to time. So I'll just get plus I squared from the I out front R TC. Then I'm gonna come in and I'm gonna replace I with what we solved up here, this expression in terms of capacitance, voltages, and time. So I'll replace it here, C times V2 minus V1 over TC. So this I, that multiplies V1 plus V2 over 2 T sub C plus I squared C times V2 minus V1 over T sub C squared R T sub C. Okay. Then these two things will cancel. This T sub C will cancel with one of these two. Since this T sub C is getting squared, it'll cancel with one of them. And we'll end up with C over 2, V2 minus V1 times V1 plus V2 will be V2 squared minus V1 squared. Plus second term, I'll end up with C V2 minus V1 squared times R over T sub C. And that C is squared. I'm going to just rearrange a little bit, take that second C and put it over here. And then I'm going to multiply by 1/2. I do all need to multiply by 2 over here. And I end up with something that starts to look familiar. So this term right here is the energy that went to the capacitor. And this term right here is our loss term, the energy that was lost in the resistor. Okay, what does this look like? Yes.
Is that a 2 at the very end of that whole term?
This right here is a two.
Oh, okay.
Two came from, I inserted a 1/2 here. And so I inserted a two on the right. These two will multiply and become one.
No, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, just want to make sure.
Sure. So the reason I did that is this part, 1/2 CV2 minus V1 squared, is the loss in the voltage source case, right? This is what we had when we charged from a voltage source. And this thing on the right is some scale factor. Okay. So this here, is a scale factor. Difference between voltage source charging and current source charging. Okay, see if I have a blank slide next. Yeah. So let's take this on to the next slide and look at it in a little bit more detail. So yeah, let's start voltage source case. E loss was 1/2 C V2 minus V1 squared. Current source case, 1/2 C V2 minus V1 squared times 2 RC over TC. Okay, what can we say about 2 RC over TC? Okay. If TC is much greater than RC, ignoring the 2 and just lumping that in with our much greater than, current source has much less loss. Right. TC being much greater than RC means this term would be much less than 1. And our scale factor would say our current source loss is smaller. Okay. If TC is much less than RC. Initially looking at these two equations, we might say, okay, the current source has higher loss. Answer is actually, we don't know from these equations. And the reason for that is this whole voltage source analysis was based on this assumption that TC is much greater than RC. Okay. If that is violated, then we can't make the assumption that we get all the way from V1 to V2. We needed the charging time to be much greater than the time constant of this RC circuit, such that this exponential resolves to approximately its final value by the end of this charging time. If that doesn't hold, then we can't make the substitution we did here to say just integrate in terms of voltage between these limits, and none of these results apply. Okay. So here, we don't know voltage source charging. So point being, current source charging is more efficient over the region where this approximation is even valid. Charging from a current source should have lower loss. Ends up just being scaled by this factor here, 2RC over TC. And we'll see exactly how that plays out once we plug this into a converter and actually look at what that loss entails. So current source type charging is more efficient. There is a caveat to this once we get into actual converter analysis, which is how do we actually get a current source? We've got a lot of voltage sources pretty commonly. Generally want voltage source input and output. So how do we get a current source in the circuit? Answers are either in a very lossy way that we never do, or you put inductors back in. So there may be some penalty on size, and then it brings in inductor design. We have to additionally start thinking about core loss and losses of the inductor itself. But from just a fundamental perspective, it'll significantly reduce these losses associated with what we call hard charging of the capacitor. So the last case I want to talk about is resonant charging, and this one we'll have to set up in a slightly different way. The main idea, I still want to have kind of the same behavior of a capacitor charging from V1 to V2. And I'm going to set up my resonant circuit as a voltage source, switch that throws at t is equal to zero, an inductor, and then the capacitor. C, VC, have our same initial condition. VC of t is less than zero is V1. And then I want it to go to some value V2. Over some time, t sub c. Okay. So we're going to have some current in the circuit, IL, it's going to be zero when the switch is open. So we're going to have some resonant circuit formed here with an initial condition of some voltage on V sub C and zero current. So once we start resonating, what this is going to look like is this for how I'm going to set it up. And what I'm going to have is this voltage source is going to have to be a different value in this case. Call it Vx for the moment. And I'm going to set that voltage source to whatever value will let me resonate from V1 to V2 in a half period of resonance. V1 and V2 do this. IL is going to start from zero. And I'm going to let it go through a half period of resonance. Okay. Made up some peak value, IL peak, which we'll find in a moment. I'm setting it up this way so the voltage source is a slightly different value than what we had in the voltage charging case, but this is the one that'll be more relevant to actual implementation of a switch capacitor converter. We go from taking the simplified analysis and applying it to an actual converter design. So with this setup, we're going to look at these same things, change in energy in the capacitor. Again, no change, 1/2 C, V2 squared minus V1 squared. It still goes between these same two voltages. When we go to look at the total energy supplied or the loss, in this case, I'll just directly solve for the energy loss. Okay. With this circuit as is, there should be no loss. And when I throw this switch, I don't have any loss because I'm not charging, hard charging the capacitor. To look at the main loss mechanism in the circuit, I'll again insert some resistor here, R, and see what the losses are associated with that resistance. But I'm going to make an approximation here and assume that I can solve these waveforms, assuming R is zero, and then kind of come back and plug in R to calculate the losses. Okay. So I'll do this high efficiency approximation. So I'm going to set R is equal to zero, use state plane analysis to solve for what is this peak current, what is the shape in IL, and then my energy loss will be IL RMS squared times R. times TC for energy. Power loss will be IRMS squared times R. Okay. So since this is a sinusoidal half segment, the RMS I can replace with IL peak over square root of 2, or say this is IL peak squared over 2 times R times TC. So I just need to figure out what this peak current is. So to find that peak current, I'm going to look at this resonant circuit, new state plane analysis. So kind of just off to the side here, plot my state plane, JL versus M sub C. My voltage goes from V1 to V2. When I close this switch, got this series resonance between L and C, the initial inductor current is zero, the initial capacitor voltage is V1. So I'm going to start right here. And then I'm going to resonate around a center of zero current and Vx voltage. And to get this to play out nicely, Vx is going to be right in the center. V1 plus V2 over 2, or the mean of these two values, which will put my radius at Vx minus V1, and then I'll resonate around in a half circle right to V2. I put Vx in the center such that that radius will have me hit V2 exactly. Okay. Vx is equal to V1 plus V2 over 2. Okay, then my JL peak is equal to I've been making a mistake. These should all be M's, excuse me. So then my JL peak is equal to whatever this radius is, R1. Which I can say is equal to mx minus m1. It's also equal to m2 minus mx. Plugging those together, it's equal to m2 minus m1 over 2. Since mx is right in the middle, it's half the distance between m2 and m1. So then my IL peak is JL peak times I base. And I'll take the V base. I haven't even really defined, but since I'm just going to denormalize right away, it's not important. So I'll take the V base that's in the numerator of I base, multiply JL peak to get V2 minus V1 over 2, and then I'll have the 1 over R naught left. So now from state plane analysis, I have this peak current. I can just plug it in here to get the loss. So we'll have V2 minus V1 over 2 R naught squared times R T sub C over 2. Okay. I can, from the state plane, also infer some things about T sub C. Here, T sub C is what? Well, it's an angle of pi on the state plane. So it is pi over omega naught. So let's go ahead and plug that in. R pi over 2 omega naught. And then down here in the denominator, I'm going to take one of these R naughts and this omega naught and multiply them together. 1 over R naught omega naught is equal to Let's see, 1 over omega naught will be root LC in the numerator, denominator root L by C. The L's will cancel, the C will flip up, and this is just equal to C. So then our energy loss expression becomes V2 minus V1 squared over 4 R naught times R C pi over 2. So let's take this on to the next page and continue. See, I'll pull the 1/2 C out front. And what I'm left with is R pi over 4 R naught. And so again, what we have is something that looks like some scale factor here times loss in the voltage source case. Okay, we've got this pi over 4 factor, R over R naught. Is MRSA the quality factor of our resonance? So this should be some small for a high Q resonance. Or not much greater than R. And again, kind of like in the voltage source case, this was already assumed in our analysis. So our analysis is really only valid if the resistance is small enough such that we can make this approximation solve using the state plane where we assume the resistance is zero and then plug those waveforms back in. If that's not true, then none of this analysis works anyway. We have to consider this to not be a circle, but some decaying spiral. So as long as this analysis was valid, then R over R naught is small, and the losses in this resonant case should be much smaller than what we got in the voltage source case. Again, small resistance, this should be a much better way to transfer energy than just the hard charging case. Okay, we can take this factor and then do a little bit more analysis with it, rewrite this in a different way. So R pi over 4 R naught. What we'll do is come back to this equation here, 1 over R naught omega naught is equal to C. And that 1 over R naught is equal to omega naught C. And then my omega naught is equal to pi over T sub C. So I'll get R pi squared C over 4 T sub C, or let's rewrite this as pi squared RC over 4 T sub C. So again, what does this tell us? This factor, just this one written in a different way. Tells us we want this scale factor to be small for small loss. We want T sub C is much greater than RC to make this factor small. Again, is what we want in every case. We want the time to be much longer than the RC dynamics. Okay, what was our scale factor in the current case? It was just a factor of 2 times RC over T sub C. Here we've got pi squared over 4, about 2.5, a little bit larger of a scale factor than in the pure current source charging case. But trade-off being that we may not need a large inductor. We don't need a big filter inductor to maintain a current source. We just need a small resonant inductor that resonates at the switching frequency of the converter, resonates with a half period equal to this T sub C. Okay, so let's bring all three of these together. We looked at three different energy transfer mechanisms. I say, for a capacitor, charge from V1 to V2, and time T sub C. We looked at voltage charging, current source charging, and then resonant charging. Compare the energy loss of these three cases for voltage source, 1/2 C V2 minus V1 squared. Current source, 1/2 C V2 minus V1 squared times 2 RC over TC. Resonant, 1/2 C V2 minus V1 squared times pi squared RC over 4 TC. So all three of them have the same first term. But in the current source and resonant case, we can reduce that by these factors. Again, where we're assuming T sub C is much greater than RC. So I'm gonna add here assumptions that we already built into the analysis. This result for the voltage source case was only valid for T sub C much greater than RC, which was the time constant of our charging. We need multiple time constants in order for this charging to nearly complete. Current source, really no assumptions to speak of. Resonant case, we assume that we have this high Q resonance. Are not much greater than R, high quality factor resonance that allows us to make this high efficiency approximation and solve the waveform without considering decay in the energy in that resonance. Just calculate the RMS current loss after the fact. Okay. So tell us there's some trade-off here in the switch capacitor converters. Okay, if I go with just voltage source charging, I have nothing but my voltage source at the input and output switches and capacitors, I'm going to get the maximal loss of these three cases. I can add inductors, I can get that loss down either by making some kind of current source that charges them with lower loss or by resonating with the capacitor in this charging process. But in both of these, I'm gonna have to add additional elements. I'm gonna have to take whatever I had when I just had switches and caps, add some inductors to it, and there's gonna be a penalty on size and power density as a result. So, let's go back and actually put some of this analysis into a converter. So we're going to go back to this just ladder type 2-to-1 switch capacitor converter that we looked at before, and now analyze it without making these assumptions that all the voltages are constant and just go to these steady state values. So when we look at this converter now in actual operation, I'm going to look at Vfly. And consider it to be finite and not have a DC value, have some ripple on this voltage. Again, switch back and forth between subcircuits 1 and 2 with just 50% duty cycle. And I'm going to assume that my assumption holds. T sub C is much greater than RC. that allows us to sketch these waveforms and say these exponentials basically arrive at their final value. So what's going to happen in interval two? Again, say the output capacitor is more or less infinite and the input is a real voltage source, perfect voltage source, but C fly is a finite capacitor. So I'm really talking about C fly here. So in interval two, assuming that time constant is much greater than RC fly, it'll kind of arrive at its final value, which will be the voltage V. And then in interval one, it'll eventually arrive at VG minus V. Okay. So what's going to happen is that in a real circuit operation, as opposed to our ideal analysis, V is going to be a little bit less than VG minus V. And so we're going to see ripple on this capacitor. So interval one, it's going to get charged up. And it's going to charge up with some waveform, some exponential rise, flatten out. In interval two, it's going to get discharged as it connects to the output and delivers power to the load resistance. Okay. In interval two, it's going to end up at V, looping back around to the start of the period that's here. And then in interval one, it's going to go up to VG minus V. V is a little bit lower than VG minus V in our ideal analysis previously. Back up here. Made this assumption, okay, we end up at the same point in this, our idealized analysis. In interval two, V fly goes to V. In interval one, it goes to VG minus V. Then we made this assumption that there's zero ripple on it, so that those two are the same thing. Without making that assumption, they'll be a little bit different. And we want to constrain that difference, because that difference is going to be our delta VC, is going to be the thing that produces loss in this converter. But with a finite capacitor, we'll have some amount of difference there. Okay. So then using the analysis we did on these simplified circuits, just this voltage source charging, can say in each of these intervals, we have some delta VC. It goes between V and VG minus V, and then the other direction. And in both of those intervals, we'll end up with some energy loss that looks like 1/2 C times the difference between the voltages squared. Okay, so in this process, our energy loss looks like, okay, in interval one, we'll have 1/2 C fly times VG minus V squared. Interval two, 1/2 C fly times V minus VG minus V quantity squared. Since we're squaring it, this expression is the negative of this expression. When we square them, that negative will go away and we're just going to get two of the same thing. So our total power loss, we sum these two things up, we get C fly times, let's write it as VG minus 2V squared. That's going to happen, that energy, once per period. So that's our total power loss, but our input power. Okay, so our input power, we really only have current in subinterval one. Our input power is going to be just VG times however much total charge is pulled out of the input in subinterval one. We integrate over the input current, we'll integrate IG, which is equal to I fly in interval one, plug in and say that's C times delta V, the total charge. And interval two will have zero. So this is going to look like Vg times C fly times the change in voltage over that interval times Fs, that amount of charge once per period, or divide by Ts to average it. So now if we know the loss and we know the input power, start to analyze this thing and say what the main behavior of it is, we can look at efficiency and other things. So I'm going to copy these two equations on the next slide, and we're going to develop an equivalent circuit model of what this looks like.
Dr. Kostinet?
Yeah.
When you scale this to say 3:1, 4:1,
mm-hmm.
are you simply scaling that 2V to 4V, 5V, or is it not exactly linear?
If you're sticking with the same topology, so in a ladder type converter, it's going to look pretty similar. The difference, there will be a difference in the total losses, and we'll kind of generalize this analysis next and show how to get it for different topologies. For the 2:1, it's simple enough to go through and just say, okay, in one, here's what happens, and two, here's what happens. If we decided to do like a 8:1 converter, that becomes a bit cumbersome. There'll still only be two switching subintervals, but we'll have a whole lot of different caps that we have to analyze. So there's a little bit of a better way to go through it. But what we're going to do on the next slide, what the equivalent circuit behavior of this is, will stay the same. Just values will scale differently. So not a complete answer to your question right now, but that's what we'll do next. So let me copy these two equations on the next slide. So our loss was C fly Fs Vg minus 2V squared. And our input power was C fly Fs times Vg times Vg minus 2V. Okay, so what I want to do here is, as the title implies, talk about an equivalent circuit model of this. Okay, so got my input source VG. I'll say, what sort of behavior do these two equations imply about the circuit formed by the switch capacitor converter? So both of them have this C fly Fs term. And we'll start with this power loss. Okay, it looks like some voltage squared times C fly Fs. It means we can think of the C fly Fs as 1/ some equivalent resistor. Power is V squared over R on a resistor. So if we say some equivalent resistor is 1/ C fly Fs, then this equation would look like this voltage squared divided by Req is equal to our power. Okay, what is that resistance? So if I sketch an equivalent circuit here, this resistance in series, then right here is this voltage 2V. This circuit would represent this first equation, right? So the voltage across Req would be Vg minus 2V. And then the power loss in this resistance would be Req, 1/ Req times Vg minus 2V squared, give me the same power loss. Okay, it would also satisfy the second equation. So the input power is Vg times Ig here. Ig would be Vg minus 2V divided by Req, which is what I have here. So with this resistance of 1/ C fly Fs, this equivalent circuit models what this 2-to-1 switch capacitor is doing on average, to get the average powers. Okay. More often, the way I'll sketch this, rather than having 2V here, is I'll replace that with a 2-to-1 transformer. Transformer 2-to-1 and connect my load right here. What we end up with is something that looks like an ideal transformer. This has the ideal conversion ratio of the switch capacitor converter. So it's 2-to-1 exactly. 2-to-1 is what we thought we would get before we considered any of this ripple or anything else. Assuming a finite Z fly, what it changed about all of this is it just gave us some additional resistance in series here. Looks like 1/C fly FS. More often, just rearranging a bit, the way you would see this is pushing REQ to the output and calling it an output resistance. So I'm just going to reflect REQ through. What I'll get is REQ over 2 squared. And 2-to-1 transformer. And sometimes called RO or R out, the output resistance of this. Okay. Presence of that output resistance means what? It means that, okay, as we pull more current out of this thing, the voltage is going to drop. And that is, if you recall last time I mentioned, there is no regulation in a switch capacitor converter other than lossy regulation. So if some ability to change the output voltage by pulling more current out of it, voltage will drop somewhat, but that delta V is all lost on this resistor. Okay. So we really don't want to operate in that manner. We want V to be as close as possible to VG over 2 in this, then we'll have small current, small losses on this resistance. Okay. High efficiency, want small REQ, so 1/C fly FS. We want large C fly, large FS. The problem with that and the limitation on that is if we want large capacitor and we want to switch really fast, it becomes harder and harder to keep this inequality true and keep in this mode of operation. Okay. If we want to start decreasing the time because we're going to higher switching frequency and increasing the capacitance, both of those kind of fight against maintaining this inequality. Unless we can let R go to 0, we're not going to be able to hold here. So with some small resistance in the circuit, usually the on resistance of the FETs and the ESR of the capacitor, we can't just make infinite C fly and very small TC. There's some limit there to keep in this mode. And we'll talk about what that limit is and how to maintain it and what happens if we violate it next time. We'll end there and stop the recording.